Welcome to The Grand Life, a podcast about grandparenting, exploring ways to be better at it and connect to those who are in it with us. I'm Emily Morgan. I have to say that my next guest has been one of my favorite interviews. I'm talking with Helen Ellis, an author who lives in New Zealand and who has written a new book called Being a Distance Grandparent. And as you know, a Kiwi knows something about distance, since they are far away from almost everyone. My travels took me there when we had a son studying at the University of Canterbury in the city of Christchurch. So it was fun for me to talk to Helen about her homeland, and also how she deals with children and grandchildren who don't live there anymore. Helen Ellis is a New Zealand researcher, writer, anthropologist, and a veteran of distance grandparenting. Three of her four children, five of her six grandchildren, live 16 to 30 flight hours away in America, England, and Scotland. Helen, welcome to The Grand Life. So good to have you here.
Thank you for having me on. I'm just a delight to be here.
So reading through your book, I was impressed by how comprehensive it was. I mean, it covered so much of what a distance grandparent has to deal with. And a lot of us live some distance from at least some of our grands, but I'm wondering if you could maybe explain to us how you define a distance grandparent, and maybe that's versus, say, a global grandparent, and why you chose to primarily concentrate on the distance grandparent in your book.
That's a good question. At a glance, a distance grandparent and a global grandparent, you probably think it's the same thing, but in reality, if you live on the west coast of the United States and your grandchildren are on the east coast, you are most definitely a distance grandparent. You have time zones, traveling time, everything to in your package. You might not be global because you're living in the same country. So I didn't want to use the term global because I didn't want to exclude those people who have significant distance within their transnational families, and they have all the ingredients of what it is to be a global grandparent. They just happen to be in the same culture. So I've stuck with that. When I did my research originally for my master's, and I was initially just talking to New Zealand grandparents, I decided that I would just interview parents who had children who were at least an 8-hour flight away. And that's all to do with the context of the fact that here in New Zealand, we think a 3-hour flight to Sydney, Australia is like nothing. You can do that and you can go for a weekend. So my criteria was, it was pretty tricky to go for a weekend. But these days, with COVID, the pandemic, and all these restrictions, there is no hard and fast rule about what the distance of distance grandparenting is. If your child, grandchildren are in the other suburb and you can't see them, well, you're suffering the same as the rest of us.
Yeah, it's true. You know, I really enjoyed that in your book, you're honest about the way grandparents feel about their situations. And at one point in your book, you address the grandparent quandary. That's what you call it. Maybe you could expound on that. How have you felt that yourself at times, this grandparent quandary?
Well, it came from a quote from an author, New Zealand author called Margaret Mahey. And what she spoke about was, one part of us as parents, we want our children to be self-sufficient. We want them to be independent. This is satisfying and an outward sign of our successful parenting. We're proud about what our children have done venturing into the world. And we kind of maybe even enjoy the trappings of that success, chatting about it at the dinner table. However, the other part of it is that we really wish they were just here. Mm-hmm. So we're kind of happy and sad at the same time. And it can be very much affected by even the occupation or the career of your distant son or children who've gone away. If they're in the military or they're missionaries or they're a high-profile corporate or diplomat, they're leading a really busy life that they don't necessarily have a lot of time to be putting into their distance parents. So on one hand, you're really proud of what they're doing, but on the other hand, you'd just rather they were here.
Yeah.
Maybe doing a simpler job and had more time to do the familying things. So that's the quandary. It's this being proud and sad at the same time.
So you have felt that yourself, I guess. I mean, I have some children who live further away. You know, it takes a whole day to get there. And I sometimes think to myself, oh, what did I do wrong that they don't want to live close to me? You know, that kind of thing. And I really don't have anything to complain about. In fact, I did that to my parents. They live very far away from me, 18-hour drive from where I am. So, you know, I understand that. Have you felt that way yourself at times?
Yes, I have. My daughter and son-in-law have worked for NGOs, and they've, you know, at the drop of a whatever, they have to be on a plane to do some rescue, sort something in some other part of the world. And that affects everything, you know, and they're working for causes that are wholesome and good and wonderful for the world. And why would I, as their parent, go, oh, but, you know, haven't you got time to chat with me?
Yeah.
Like, it's almost like you shouldn't say that.
Yeah.
And it's a very quiet place, a kind of lonely place, because your friends are going, oh, how's so-and-so? They're doing such a wonderful job. And you're just going, I know, but it would be nice if they were home.
Yeah.
So happy and sad, proud and sad at the same time.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, I know in the future you're planning two other books to accompany this one book that you have. You touched on the three-pronged idea when you wrote about something you called the distance family thinking pie. This is from your book. Could you talk a little about what that is and how it helps us as grandparents to understand how differently each generation thinks about distance?
Thank you. Well, to come back to the three-prong idea, it's probably good to understand that when I first started this project, I was only going to write a book about being a distance grandparent. And I stood back and thought, hang on, there are three sides to this story. There's how we think, there's how our distant son and daughters think, and there's how our grandchildren think. Mm-hmm. So our world is only just part of it. So that has led me to a project involving three books, not one.
That's a lot to
take. Be careful what you think about.
Exactly.
So, you know, I've just, you know, in the process of finishing this first book, it'll be out soon, but I have yet to write the other two, but they will happen. So coming back to the pie, think of a pie and you're dividing it into three slices, and it's all about how much do we each think about each other. Now, as the grandparents and the parents and the grandparents, I believe that we do the most thinking. When I get up in the morning, the first thing I do is check my mobile phone for texts. Mm-hmm. Because if there's an emergency, it will come by text. It won't be an email. So I check my texts and then I'll fluff around in the kitchen and then I check my emails. Our sons, daughters, daughters-in-law, and our distance grandchildren are not getting up thinking, how's mom and dad?
Totally.
You know, are they okay? I mean, unless there's something drastically wrong at the time.
Yeah.
They've got other things to do. They've got children to get off to school. Right now they're homeschooling them or they're working at home. And we are not part of their thinking. So it's really good to stand back and go, hang on. I'm doing all this thinking, but they're not doing all this thinking. And it's nothing wrong.
Right.
It's not a criticism of them. It's just getting everything in perspective.
Yeah.
And I think as we, you know, approaching retirement or maybe got a little bit more time on our hands, probably got more time to do thinking as well.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I didn't think about my parents that much when I was bringing up our children. I was too busy.
Yes.
So, and they were far away. So you're right. And I think that is so good to keep in mind because it's easy to take it personally, but it really isn't personal.
No, you have to put yourself in their shoes. Imagine yourself when you were raising your children, when we didn't have the internet and all these. Imagine if there was some device in a corner that was wanting to ring you all the time.
It is hard to imagine. Oh, man. You know, in this book, you give grandparents some tips on how to have rich encounters with their grands who live far away. And this is important to all of us who have grands who live far away. And without giving the whole list away, because obviously you've got a great amount of them in your book, what are some of the things we need to remember to make sure our encounters with our grands are optimized? And also, what responsibility does the middle generation have in helping those connections be successful? We're calling it the middle generation, which would be our children.
That's correct. Well, I think, first of all, there needs to be an attitude that communication, especially with little ones, it's a lucky dip, you know?
Yeah.
If every phone call has to be perfect, it's just an unrealistic expectation. Some of them will be magic. The kids are on form, they're fed and they're happy and they're not tired and they'll chat to you. But the next day, their mother will say, do you want to talk with Nana? No.
Yeah, that just happened to me this week.
Yes. I mean, half an hour ago, I was talking with my grandkids in Atlanta and they were on full form. They were fantastic. But, you know, 2 days ago, they were all over the place, jumping on couches and other such things. So take an attitude that it's a lucky dip. Then we're not looking for perfection. But one thing, you know, you could think about is, do you like quality versus quantity? Do you like it as a grandparent or a parent when you've got the laptop open on the kitchen counter and you're peeling the potatoes and getting ready for dinner, and at the same time you're just talking with your grandchildren, they're coming in and out of the room at the other end, it's all a bit of a mayhem, but you kind of feel connected. So you might have it on for an hour and a half, maybe not as a lot as said, but you kind of feel that you're with them, you're kind of in the same room. Or maybe you're a person that goes, I can't stand all the clutter. I just want their attention. I would rather have 15 minutes of a great one-on-one conversation than 45 minutes of saucepans and homework and phones ringing and everything else. And I think it's good to be aware of that. And it can be the same for the people at the other end. What is best for them?
Yeah.
What works best?
That's really a good thing, because I think for us to know ourselves and what we want, because we tend to be fairly accommodating since they do take up a big part of our pie, our thinking pie. You even had a little quote in your book that said, distance families are continuously on stage needing to perform. And for some, this is a burden. And I think this is what you're speaking to. Is that correct?
This is one aspect. Yes, I think so. And we don't actually realize this. There are a lot of people of all ages who honestly don't like video communication. They hate being constantly on the screen. And we can all relate to that because we all approach public speaking in a different way.
Yeah.
If this is you, like if you are dialing up and dreading every moment of it, then I think it's our responsibility to try and initiate additional ways to communicate so it doesn't have to be the video call all the time. And that comes back to texts or emails or the handwritten letter. And the same thing at the other end. If you're conscious of a daughter-in-law or son who's kind of hesitant and he doesn't hang around the camera that long because he really hates it. It's not that he or she doesn't like you. Mm-hmm. They really hate being on stage.
Yeah.
So once again, reach out to them, send them a text, send them an email, write them a letter. And the magic thing there is that next time you're booked in for a group video call, it might be possible that that family member can say, oh, no, we chatted yesterday. I had a long email from her yesterday. I don't need to connect today. So that's one less video call that hesitant person has to participate in, but you've still connected.
Oh, thank you for that. Thank you for that permission. We need that. In fact, I want to talk a little bit about the guilt that accompanies parents who move away from the grandparents, or for grandparents who move away from their grandchildren. I mean, talk a little bit about how we deal with that. I mean, that has a kind of a stigma to it. It's like, why would you move away from your grandchildren?
Well, let's assume that this conversation's about situations where your family as a grandparent is already close. You know, I mean, if they're in another city, it's not really the same, is it?
No.
But let's assume they are close. So as a parent, as a grandparent, you've made a decision to move to the sun or wherever. And it's hard. It's going to be a hiding to nothing, I think. But you know what? There's so many similarities to how it is for our distant sons and daughters when they make the decision themselves to go overseas.
Right.
And all the research, every conversation, every article I read about what it's like for our distant sons and daughters, the strongest emotion they feel all the time is the guilt of the left behind family.
Mm-hmm.
So if we as parents and grandparents take ourselves off to somewhere else for our retirement, then be prepared for the fact that the guilt will be one of the strongest emotions that you have to experience. But on the other hand, just as our sons and daughters disappear, you're disappearing because you feel it's the right decision for you. And there are loads of decisions we make, and whether it's who we marry or how many kids we have or whatever, because it's the right decision for us. So you have to be a little bit kind of tough in how that happens and to get through it. But just some things that I think would make a big difference is addressing the subject earlier than later with your family,
mm-hmm.
getting them prepared, making them feel that they're part of it, because you want to know how they feel and we want to work at this as a team. Absolutely, get yourself digitally sorted out. If you are hesitant, don't like the internet, have trouble with certain apps or whatever, this is a time where there's no excuses. You've just got to take the classes or find somebody to help and make sure that you're really competent.
Yeah.
Because if you aren't, you are closing doors of communication. Financially, you know, if you're in a position to say, I'm moving to Florida, but every summer I will come home and rent an Airbnb for 2 weeks down the road and come and see you, or I'm going to give you some airfares for the children to come on the school holidays and come and visit me. If you are in a position financially to make those commitments to the future, then it's probably a good idea to do that as being part of the deal. And that can even be thinking way into the future. When you put yourself in the shoes of your family who are left behind, they could be thinking, how can I look after mum or dad when they're elderly and they need to go to the doctor and they need to go to the supermarket?
Yes.
We need to financially look after ourselves at that time. I tell my distance grandparent friends here, don't be the bank of mum and dad too much, because when you're old and grey and but wobbly,
needy,
you know, you'll be paying for a taxi to get to the supermarket. And these things are expensive. So, you know, can you afford to be self-sufficient when you're not as able? Because you move to the Florida when you're able and fit, but it's not always going to be like that. So those are different things that I would definitely work on, because your sons and daughters, you know, they're even worrying about what it's going to be like when they drive past your house and there's a different car outside. And how is that going to be for the grandchildren?
Yeah, so, that's so true.
Yeah. So you, on one hand, you're excited about the move and you're thinking about what you're going to take and the house you're going to buy or whatever, but you need to put as much thought into what am I leaving behind and what assurances can I give my children? And just going back to that other a point we discussed, you asked me about initiating communication. And I think this is a time when you talk with your family who have been previously close but are now going to be far, and say, I need you to be the ones to initiate the communication more often than not. And it's not because us as parents and grandparents don't want to chat. We want to chat all the time. But we need them to initiate it at a time that's convenient for them, because they're the ones with the children and the after-school activities and children needing to get to sleep. So it's very important that that our distant sons and daughters realise that it is their responsibility. So you need to ask. That's part of the planning, is asking them.
Oh, that is very interesting and true about the middle generation. We kind of have to depend on them to be a little bit. If they want that connection, and they I would think they would, then they need to help in that way. If they don't, it just makes it really hard if they don't facilitate that at all.
It's huge.
You know, finally, Helen, can you tell us a little bit from your book about how fruitcake has played a role in your own personal distance grandparenting?
Oh, that's such a funny question. In my book, I say fruitcake is a working partner in my distance grandparenting role. Well, let me just rewind the track on that one. First of all, I come from an English background. New Zealand has a lot of English immigrants. My dad was born in London. And fruitcake is, I think, a very English thing. A wedding cake is a fruitcake. A Christmas cake is a fruitcake. And traditionally, a good wife, a good mother would bake her Christmas cake in October, and then spend the next few months just sprinkling a bit more sherry on it every few weeks until Christmas. And you know, can imagine what it was like by Christmas Day.
Yum.
So I am no baker. So to all of you who, I can cook meals, I can produce dinners just like that, but I am not a baker. But I have taken up baking fruitcake because my mother-in-law here was famous for it, and I thought it was one thing I could do for my husband is to have fruitcake. So I have, it's become a bit of a thing. So when I travel to the States where my smallest grandchildren are now, I will take fruitcake. And the last time I saw my grandkids, I saw any of my grandkids, was Christmas 2018, so it's been a long time. So when we took fruitcake last time, we gave a slice to Santa Claus and outside on Christmas Eve with the carrot and the glass of port for his visit. And my little grandsons, my little grandsons are obsessed with fruitcake. They absolutely love it. So what I'm aware is that it's a senses filled sight, taste, smell. A few months ago, a neighbor of my daughter in the States came down, a long story, but they've got a relative here in Auckland in New Zealand. And they came round and we met them. And she said to me, "Oh, is there anything you want me to take back?" And I never like to burden people with that because luggage allowance is always so precious, especially when you're as far away as we are.
And fruitcake is very heavy.
I said, well, actually, in the freezer, I've got this little square. It's like 6 inches by 6 inches.
It was small.
A quarter of a cake. And she said, "No problem." I'm going, "Oh, wow." So I put it in a Tupperware container and it winged its way back to the state of Georgia. Wow. The three-year-old and five-year-old went berserk.
Oh, what a way to show love.
As soon as they opened the container, they remembered back to fruitcake. So maybe your listeners, you know, have already got those experiences and those things, those rituals. And I just know that they're really worth it and they're really worth the postage. And honestly, maybe this coming Christmas, if I can't, I mean, we're not going to go anywhere. New Zealand is locked away in the whole world. So we're not going anywhere. Nobody's coming down here. Maybe I need to splash out and spend whatever the postage is and send a proper funnel cake.
That's going to be an expense, but worth it. And you know what? I think I need to get your recipe for fruitcake because I've not found one that I really like, but I do think I would like fruitcake if I had the right recipe. That'd be great. Thank you so much, Helen, for spending some time with us today. You know, I know that many of our listeners have grands who live far away from them, and you have really given us some new ways of thinking about our situation. So thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It's been an absolute pleasure. And thank you for everything you're doing in the world of grandparents. It's very, very important. Thanks, Emily.
Talking with Helen was a treat, and I expect I'll be making some fruitcakes sometime in the future. Remember, however you choose to love your distant grandchildren, it is enough. It doesn't have to be a lot, and we shouldn't spend time comparing ourselves to others. As our middle generation kids are fond of saying, you do you. Our next episode of The Grand Life concentrates on what it's like to be the middle generation living far from loved ones. Robin lives outside of Paris, and the rest of her family lives quite a distance away. We talk about her own experience as a daughter, including how it was for her as she walked through the loss of her mom, grandmother to her three boys, from thousands of miles away.
Plane tickets are very expensive, and for us that's just part of our family budget, is knowing that once or twice a year we're going to be flying to the U.S., and it's often hard to get family to come visit you. It was easier for my parents to hop on a plane and come see us, but my siblings, who had also babies and toddlers, and that big expense that's not necessarily factored into their budget, you know, that's a big ask. It's a really big ask.
I'd love it if you would share your thoughts and ideas for this podcast by contacting me at grandlifeconnection@gmail.com or leave a voicemail at 317-572-7876. I've said it before, I do not pretend to be the best grandparent ever, but I will confess to believing that being one is the best thing ever. I'm Emily Morgan, and thanks for joining me in living the grand life. We'll be right back.
This podcast was written and hosted by Emily Morgan, my grandmother. It was produced and edited by Mike Morgan, my grandfather. Email them at grandlifeconnection@gmail.com.